This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading, except from about mid-November to January, the first week of January, in which we do all sorts of things that are related to books. But as is our longest-standing tradition, question mark,
I believe
Rebecca?
So.
Yeah, our first bit that wasn't just the regular format of the show, which frankly hasn't changed in the 10 years or so we've been doing the show of talking about the headlines from the world of books and reading, is our holiday recommendation extravaganza, in which listeners write in, ask for recommendations for themselves, increasingly wonderfully, and also friends and families that they're shopping for. This can be a kind of a strange release, a podcaster error in y'all's favor that the show you just listened to, that we did a regular news episode last week, was supposed to be the first one of these. So there's kind of a bonus episode thrown in here that you're going to notice. This is coming out on an unusual schedule, kind of a midweek, so you can get a little pre-Thanksgiving listening in. And then the second half of this show will be released the day after the Thanksgiving weekend. So hopefully it gives you enough time to do your little shopping and everything else you're going to do. Point of order real quick, or not point of order, but just a quick note or a moment to spend on the book buying season. I was in Powell's over the weekend, as I am wont to do, poking around, and I checked our hot titles to see who is in stock, and everybody's at the party. Everyone's ready to be bought. I saw Babel.
Good.
I saw I'm Glad My Mom Died. I guess those are the two. There's plenty of Colleen Hoover coming out the windows, even at Powell's. You can get that wherever you want, but it doesn't sound like we're having anything like the thing. I guess there's not even whispers that we heard last year that didn't materialize of some sort of, I guess, logistics problem, right? Remember last year, everyone's like, buy your books earlier, you're not going to be able to get whatever book.
Yeah, we saw that in, I think, like late September, early October last year. Like, these are the big titles that are going to be hard to get because of either print runs or supply chain issues. And if you want these as gifts, order them now. Also, most years, there's a cookbook that this happens with. And I have not
heard
about that. That doesn't mean it's not happening this year. But usually, like, no matter how well the publishers anticipate it, there's like some cookbook that has some sort of surprise holiday breakout and start selling out earlier than expected, or just way more than anybody guessed that it would. And the booksellers find themselves running out of it well before, you know, Christmas Eve, which is a really popular day, I've come to understand, for the buying of cookbooks, because you're like grasping for a last minute thing. And a lot of people like cookbooks. And if it's something like, it happened with Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat.
I was going to say, that's the one I remember of late.
That's like, that's like really widely appealing, that you could buy for almost anybody without having to know, you know, their specific taste or dietary preferences, or like, as we were talking about last week, their fiction preferences, which is really hard to shop for.
Right.
You can give them
a cookbook.
And right. Surely you can pick something in this 400-page book and do a thing with it. Yeah, it's interesting that it feels, this holiday season feels like a return to like quote unquote normal, to like what we had in the holiday season of 2019, the last time we had a, you know, a normal seeming, you know, supply chain and consumer behavior is has shifted a lot from back to what we were seeing before, you know, everybody was stuck in their houses for a couple of years and just rapidly buying books.
Yeah. And so don't dilly-dally. You probably want to get there before Christmas Eve if you're going to try to get Babel or Where My Mom Died. Maybe they will sell out in certain places. I don't really know what the shape of the buying will be there. But it was nice to see the shelves full. And there's so many books, Rebecca. Oh, my word. Are there,
there
a lot?
Are so many books in the world.
And so we understand the problem of this kind of show. And I know some of you that so many of you who listen are sort of the book person in your world, if not your family, then maybe even your extended family or our friends circle. And we always have a lot of fun talking about this. The last episode, the most giftable books of 2022, I think I tried not to do any repeats of stuff that we mentioned there. Now, that's not to say that I'm not going to recommend books that I've been recommending for 10 years on this show. we should have a gong. We always joke about having some sort of air horn or something that goes off when we finally recommend one of the, I don't know, the usual suspects.
Yeah, there's a handful of those
that come out. So we'll get into it in just a minute. This is a two-parter, but first we're going to take our first sponsor break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Harper Horizon, publisher of Walk, Ride, Paddle. Walk, Ride, Paddle is a captivating memoir of Senator Tim Kaine's physical journey through the Virginia wilderness, but it is also a unique and ultimately optimistic perspective on these pivotal moments in history, offering inspiration, wisdom, and hope. With immediacy and honesty, Kaine pulls back the curtain to reveal his inner thoughts during such monumental times. And Kaine's storytelling gift and wise observations offer a fascinating glimpse into the mind of a seasoned politician and outdoor enthusiast. Walk, Ride, Paddle is available everywhere audiobooks are sold on April 9th. It is narrated and written by Tim Kaine, Virginia senator and former Democratic vice presidential candidate. It's a compelling account of one man's journey across hundreds of miles of Virginia wilderness and a moving testament to the optimistic spirit of America. So make sure to check out Walk, Ride, Paddle by Tim Kaine. And thanks again to Harper Horizon, publisher of Walk, Ride, Paddle, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour. HeroQuest is a graphic novel that is the story of a genetically augmented metahuman named Hero who travels into the multiverse 400 years into the future to save Earth from a disaster it cannot avoid. It has everything from mutants to robots to zombies to aliens, witches, and more. It's a quest for 10 rings of tremendous power from 10 different worlds that will be needed to save our world from certain disaster. It's an epic journey that will require the hero named Hero to be cursed to save the lives of billions on Earth. It's a story of heroism, wonder, betrayal, and finally, revelation. This is the hero's journey. This is Hero's quest. So the story was imagined by the mind of Steve Aoki and written by New York Times bestselling author Jim Kruger and Steve Aoki. So make sure to check it out. And this episode comes thanks again to Steve Aoki's HeroQuest at your local bookstore or online at HeroQuest.com, and catch Steve live on the Heavenly Hell Tour.
We didn't really anticipate this, and it's not really a published or, you know, I guess a durable or even codifiable perk of Patreon. But since the episodes go out first on Patreon ad-free a couple days earlier, the Patreon members do get first crack at submitting their recommendations. Now, we're going to get plenty. We're going to get through all these into more. But just another side reason you might be interested in Patreon. You can get to the top of the queue. You get to find out first what weirdness is we're going to be up to in the first. And that includes getting your recommendations is... You want to start? Would you like to read the thing first, and then we'll start from there?
Yes. So this is from a Patreon member named Stephanie. They say, in the summer of 2021, we found the book Wintering by Catherine May, a personal fave of mine, I have to say. So nice job, Stephanie. When we saw that it was broken into sections by month, we decided to read each section in the actual month. And it was such an incredible experience. Any recommendations for something to read throughout the year? They're open to any topic or format.
This took me a while. I like this idea of, can you read the spring one in the spring or by month or something like that? I'm sure there are more books that do this. Anything that's a diary, you know, you could read your old Samuel Pepys and go through 1538 or something like that if you wanted to. I didn't do that. I finally thought of a book that I read this year. And let me just say, shout out to Project Frontlist. I would not have read this book if it weren't for Project Frontlist. I would have probably picked some better known, to me at least, nonfiction title. But this is one of the fruits of that labor. It's Pig Years by Ellen Gados, who from the age of 18 worked on farms in New England and got a, I think, an MFA or an undergraduate in creative writing at Hampshire College. So she's a writer by training, but also a farmer by avocation. And this is she's kind of synthesizing multiple years of her work on farms, but the cadence of the book, it kind of follows the year of her life as a farmhand in New England, and of a certain kind of, you know, the kind of farmhand that works at farms that send a bunch of stuff to the farmer's market. This isn't like huge industrial farming. So the characters, the rhythms of the year, the kinds of labors, her relationships. And so I don't think, I did on audio, so unfortunately I can't tell you from just flipping through it whether or not it's sort of easy to see, okay, here's spring, summer, winter, fall. My memory is of it, it's fairly clearly demarcated according to the seasons, but it makes for wonderful reading. It was just wonderful language, very thoughtful, by turns dark and light. exuberant and existentialist and really wonderful book. And I'm really excited to see what else she would do. I can imagine, though, that this maybe was the book she has in her, in a way, to start, right? You've been working on a farm since you were 18. You're now 24. You've been working on a farm and writing. Like, what's the next book? Maybe you go to fiction or something else like that. But it does feel like the kind of book you could sit down with and read as, I don't know, some sort of pagan benediction, right? It's not pagan, but it's of the earth, right? It's of the land and of our relationship to it. Really wonderful stuff. And it's not very long. Probably the kind of thing that I would recommend. You know, I've done this more as I've been curating myself for Frontlist, Project Frontlist. Read the first 10 pages on Kindle, I'm sorry, or whatever ebook thing you want to do, or the bookstore. I don't know, you can find this on the shelves. Another interesting point, a lot of these books came out 6 months ago. I wouldn't count on going down to your local bookstore and finding Pig Ears on the shelf right now. This book doesn't sell. You haven't heard of this book except for me talking about it. So this is another thing I don't know. So you're probably going to have to order something like this, but give yourself 5 or 10 pages and see if it's the kind of, what's this, Reading by the Fire? We might get one of those later. We got a later Reading by the Fire.
We do.
Congratulations to all of you who do that. It sounds great. But this sounds like the kind of thing you'd want to do. So read a few pages. Don't just take my word for it. I can lead you to the book, but I certainly don't want you to get into something you don't like, especially when we have the technology to try a sample. And when you're really looking for the reading experience on a sentence-by-sentence level, look at the format. Does it seem like the year kind of thing you want to do? And check it out from there. Boy, that was a lot on Pig Ears, but I guess I had a lot in me on that one, Rebecca. So there you go.
I've got a handful of these. The one that I think most closely maps onto it is A Year in the Woods by Torbjørn Eklund, which is sort of a modern day Walden kind of situation. The book is the story of the year in which he decided that once a month he was going to leave the city on Friday afternoon after finishing work, drive to a little pond lake situation outside the city, camp there, and just spend the night doing this once a month, observing time in nature, trying to decompress from city life. And the book is structured over the course of the year. And like, it's not all executed perfectly, because who can pull this off without any kind of interruption over the course of a year? Like, one night it gets super cold, and so he leaves early. And sometimes there are other kinds of disruptions, but that's part of the experience as well. And it's like, it kind of read to me as like, minimum viable retreat. Like, okay, once a month, I'm going to go do this for one night. Seems pretty manageable, because, you know, we can't all just move into the woods like Thoreau did. It was really lovely. It's a really quiet book. You could move through it over the course of the year for sure. My favorite food book, I think, is Life is Meals by James and Kay Salter. I mean, it's hard to beat James Salter writing about anything, but James Salter writing about food is just chef's kiss. And it is structured also throughout the course of a year. It's his writing about their life together. They loved to cook. They loved to host dinner parties. They kept this journal in their kitchen that he describes as this like very well-loved, you know, broken in leather journal, where they would note like every recipe that they had cooked together, who came for dinner on October 15th and what they served and who liked which dishes. And so they could go back to it and reference over the course of their lives. And so the book is structured with memories of some of those key moments that happened at different points in a year, and then also recipes that they loved. I think I've said on a show before, this is one of my favorite things to give couples as a wedding gift, like buy something from their registry that's for the kitchen. And if these are people that I know like food, I also give them a copy of Life is Meals and a really nice new leather journal that they can keep in their kitchen. That's a good one. And also The Taste of Country Cooking by Edna Lewis, who is one of, if not the first, Black woman to become sort of like a well-known cookbook author. Several decades ago, she was from Virginia, and The Taste of Country Cooking is organized really by the seasons, but you can sort of get in there with month by month, or you could break up each season if you wanted to. And she writes about, you know, a real connection to the land, to cooking from what they had, what she and her family had available to them, from the plants that were naturally growing in the part of Virginia that she lived in, and then also sort of food traditions that were passed down in the Black culinary tradition of her generation and the ones previous to it. I came really late to awareness of Edna Lewis, and I was really grateful when someone was like, hey, this is a, you know, a great and important book in the history of food writing that also happens to be structured over the course of a year. And I guess I have a bonus for Stephanie, just in case you did not know, Catherine May has a new book coming out in February that's called Enchantment, and it is about awakening wonder. And it is not structured over a year, but it's structured in four parts of the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And I believe that if you wanted to like try to connect each of those elements to different seasons of the year, you could do that. I know they do that in Chinese medicine. So like if you wanted to rebuild your Catherine May project with her new book, you could find a way into that as well.
Got an email recently for someone who clearly was struggling to come up with the name of Life is Meals. And I immediately emailed back and just said Life is Meals. And they're like, yes, thank you. And that jogged my memory. So it's top of mind. And my family and I were at the Multnomah County Library book sale a couple weeks ago. And there was a really nice hardcover version of Life is Meals, which I only had paperback. And I just picked it up just to have it. That's the kind of book we're talking about.
Yep.
Life is Meals. We probably won't mention James Salter again. He usually comes up, but I'm sure it won't come up again anytime soon. Okay, I'm up next. Jeff and Rebecca. I always miss the call for book recommendations. No, you don't. You got it right this time. That was me. So this year, I'm really, really trying to be ahead of the game. I'm looking for some recommendations for my dad, who in retirement in his late 60s has recently started to get into reading. Let's go, Dad. That's me again. And I couldn't love it more. He likes discussing what he's been reading, and I think it gives him a nice escape from the boredom of waiting on my mom to retire with him in another year. Oh, come on. You know what? I'm sure he's just miserable this year to himself reading. Sounds terrible.
Sounds awful. A real year of solitude.
Yeah. The kickoff of his newfound love was Stephen King's Billy Summers, which he absolutely tore through, and Bruce Springsteen's memoir Born to Run. He also really enjoyed The Path, a one-mile walk through the universe by Chet Ramo. Other recently completed reads The Art of Fielding by Chad Harbach. Wow, there's a name I haven't heard in a while.
That is a name.
Which had the baseball elements he enjoyed, and The Lincoln Highway by Amar Towles. I'd really like to give him a stack of books to have at the ready when he needs something new. Always appreciate that you both think outside the box. I'm thinking inside my own box here so hard. It's so funny. And we'd love to know whatever suggestions come to mind. A big fan and appreciative of your work, Caitlin.
We are so solidly in our own boxes in the responses to this one. So I latched on mostly to the mention of The Path, a one-mile walk through the universe that I hadn't heard of, but in researching it, like this listener sold me this book.
Oh, there you go. A little wreck back.
Yeah, it's about the author sort of developing, I guess what you could call a close reading relationship with the nature in his like very close neighborhood. You know, like what are the parts of nature within about a mile of his home? And that reminded me of How to Do Nothing by Jenny Odell, which is kind of philosophically about that same thing that and it might be a really great book for retirement, because I think retirement is often pitched as like now you don't have to do anything, but she's like, actually, here's how to stay engaged with the world around you. Here's how to feel more deeply connected to the world around you. You don't have to retire and sit around on Facebook all day, which is a phenomenon that I have heard and read
I've seen
a lot about.
We'll look at my feed sometime. I'll show you the horrors that await you if you're not careful.
Right. It's beautiful. And I think the vibe of How to Do Nothing might work for somebody if my read on The Path by Chet Ramo is correct. Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer might also do that. It's just another beautiful book about really understanding the land that you come from. And then I guess I just reached more into my dad bag of tricks. I think Moneyball, great read. Get some Michael Lewis.
I think that's super a great fun. Pick. I had that in mind, and then you snagged it from me. So kudos to you for making me mad.
And the Chad Harbach mention, I started thinking like big sprawling novels. Like if dad is new to reading, you could dip into some good old fashioned John Irving. I think early to middle John Irving is where you want to go.
Shout some names. No, come on, Irving X.
Oh,
come on.
I mean,
this is your jam.
Cider House Rules.
There you go.
Owen Meany. Yeah. A Son of the Circus. The really like the sort of OG John Irving vibe. That's just a big novel you can sink into and watch all the threads come together at the end. and a more recent version of that, like Dickensian sprawl that all hooks up at the end together, is Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead. So if I were buying a stack of books for your dad, that's where I would start, is sort of that variety pack. You have really good ones here too.
Before I get into mine, I texted you a screenshot, speaking of Facebook, of John Irving's Facebook message that you didn't respond to because I think you were abashed.
I think I saw it. You sent it when I was, It was like late at night on my coast. And then I saw it when it was too early in the morning on your coast. And I was like, what is going on here?
So Rebecca coldly has abandoned John Irving in his hour of need with the last chair.
John
left.
Irving abandoned me.
Well, okay. But I've heard it's good, actually. Anyway, we don't have to get into this now. But I think we talked about the show or in private, I can't remember, about how, you know, we wish all the best for John Irving, but maybe not with The Last Chair List for us. And then on a Facebook post, a very sweet one, actually, apparently he does this. I don't know how it showed up on my feed. I don't follow him because I'm 1,000 years old and they want to show me John Irving's Facebook updates, I guess. He's shouting out like all the best of lists and most anticipated that The Last Chair List was mentioned on, and he name checks Book Riot too. And so I highlighted it and texted Rebecca just to see what she would say, and nothing was the response I got, which was, for her, is the sign of really, really feeling some kind of way. That's what I can assume here.
Well, I was just having a like, who put this on one of our lists? Because it wasn't me.
No, that's true. That's right. You didn't. I think that's a great idea, John Irving. I mean, here's the thing. One of the reasons we're not thinking outside the box too much here, Caitlin, is that it sounds like your dad has to torture the skiing metaphor, powder in front of him here down the ski slope. He hasn't read too much, so we can go back to our favorites. We don't have to think outside the box. You know, the thing about the box is the things that are in there for a reason in the box.
Yeah, so, you can like play the greatest hits here, and then he can go deeper with any of these that he likes.
It's like that movie Yesterday. He hasn't even heard the Beatles, so you can just like, it's like, oh, look, Twist and Shout. That's real good. Well, actually, that's a cover. Anyway, you get what I'm saying. So I kind of picked up on the Lincoln Highway. I'm looking at historical fiction here, especially. And then Arda Fielding, like kind of even contemporary books about baseball kind of read as historical fiction, weirdly,
because it's such a game out of time. There's like an old-fashioned vibe.
Yeah. So I think to do some of the recent ones you've heard us talk about, I think Harlem Shuffle would be a good pick. It's historical fiction.
That's a great one.
It's from sort of his lifetime-ish, right back to the middle of the century, or at least, you know, of his parents would recognize. And some of that throwback, I think people like to do in retirement, and I like to do that even now as I get older, is to go back and through time and sort of see how other people lived. On the plot, get through it. If you get hooked into it, Pachinko by Min Jin Lee, multi-generational, you can sink into it. And I think that, you know, there's some things that are going to resonate, but this also might be a little bit of a stretch for him, if not for us, right? It's a different culture, you know, different languages, different cultural experiences, and belief systems. And then my great pick, here's James Salter again, The Hunters, which page for page I've gotten probably more recommendation juice out of than any book I've ever read. Because it's going to come up later, people saying my dad or someone loved The Hunters. So The Hunters by James Salter, it's a fairly short novel based in during the Korean War, and it's set amongst a group of fighter pilots. What retired dad doesn't love fighter pilots? I can't name one. Show me one, and I'll give you a dollar. But it's really wonderful too. And then there's entree into all kinds of other writing, because I think that's one of the skeleton key properties of Salter, as he writes about dad topics. And you see me rolling my eyes here, for lack of a better term. But then he's a literary fiction writer, and very sensitive and interesting and complicated, and not for nothing, one of the great craftspeople of words that I've encountered. So if your dad likes Salter, you can get into, Life is Meals, I think is actually a good pick for a retired person looking back at their lives, frankly.
Yeah, that's true.
You can get into the rock climbing book, and there's other stuff going on there. So that's another thing I've seen my own father do in his retirement, is find a book that he likes and then go read and go discover what else is there by that author. And James Salter there for sure
Yeah,
can do that for you.
deep backlist for a bunch of these that we picked. Great. John Irving Good and point. Whitehead and James Salter. There are a lot of places that Dad could go if he likes any of these or all of them. Two James Salters in the first two selections.
And we're not here. Done yet.
We are not. We're off to the races. All right. Next question is from Victoria. She is looking for Dad. He's particularly a tricky person to buy books for. He likes some of the usual dad book authors, but he's already read everything by David McCullough and Dick Francis. He's selective about his topics. He mainly likes American history and horse racing, though he will occasionally pick up fiction if it has a good descriptive writing style. He often talks about Time and Again by Jack Finney. Some of his faves include John Adams by David McCullough, The Bully Pulpit by Loris Kearns Goodwin, and Seabiscuit by Laura Hillenbrand. As she says, I know there are hundreds of presidential biographies out there, but I think he likes, above all else, a good story told in a way that makes you feel like you're standing in the middle of the scene. Any suggestions would be incredibly welcome.
So a little book called The Hunters by... No, I actually, that was my first parenthesis. We need like some way of... Maybe there's a version of this where we at the beginning, before we see the questions, we pick 10 books to recommend. And for each of the recommendations, we have to say which of those 10 books is the best fit. And I get The Hunters, and you take every other book that's ever been made, and we'll see who comes out ahead.
Fair enough.
Kidding a little bit here. Also, I should say, if you're listening to this show, and you did, and one of these questions are yours, some of these picks are good. You're going to hear other people's recommendation requests. Like, there's a lot of dads, Rebecca. We didn't talk about there's a lot of dads here. A lot of dad requests.
This is a dad-heavy request really here, for sure.
Yeah. So, Hunters, you can try that. But I think even without The Hunter, even if I didn't have it off the board already, I'd be taking one of my other recent recommendation regulars. I have some alliteration for you. Barbarian Days by William Finnegan, who went on to become a magazine writer, but in his early days was one of the first world traveling surfers. And boy, oh boy, is this a great book. It is really wonderful. It's not horse racing, but I think it has that kind of alternative sports thing that horse racing does, but there's a lot of characters, a lot of locations. It's about him. It's about the world, about a world that's lost in a lot of ways. These spots and these locations that once were undiscovered now are tourist traps, not traps necessarily, but they're known now. Like, we're going to Hawaii next week, and we're going to go by Jaws, which is on the north coast of Maui, one of the great surfing spots in the world. This is the kind of place in 1964 only locals knew, and all the hardcore people now. Now, dummies like me are just going to go look at it, just to talk about the different kind of world that we're talking about. It spans the world, so you get some travel. It's a sneaky travel book, I guess, at the other thing about Barbarian Days as well. But you get to learn about surfing, and then just the pleasure of the sentence itself. I think one of the virtues of having read a bunch of books is you can find books about topics you like and really like them, and there are many I do, but the specialness is a topic you like, the cake is something you like, but then the writing on top of it is additive, and this is one of those books. And then The Hunter, and a lot of things we're going to talk about. And it sounds like when he says the good descriptive writing style, that sentence is baby. So I kind of picked up on that one as well. So that's my main pick for it, Barbarian Days by William Finnegan.
All right. Well, I need to ring the bell or strike the gong or whatever.
Yeah, here it is.
Here it is, Emperor of All Maladies by Siddhartha Mukherjee. It's written as a biography of cancer. And every year when one of us recommends this, we talk about how that's just a beautiful concept for the way this book is put together. Yeah, for how did our understanding of cancer develop over centuries? How does it work? And Mukherjee, because he is not just a researcher, he's a practicing physician, weaves it through with stories of his patients and stories of some of the people whose illness gave rise to groundbreaking discoveries in cancer science and cancer treatment. It's wonderful. The sentences are so good. I've been kind of tempted coming out of Song of the Cell to go back and reread Emperor of All Maladies because it's been 12 years. It came out in 2010. And I just remember it blew my mind. Just an incredible book. And that thing you're talking about where Dad likes to be in a good story told in a way that makes you feel like you're standing in the middle of the scene. I mean, Mukherjee is better at that than than almost anybody. And maybe the other almost anybody there is my next pick, which is anybody, anything Michael Lewis. Like, I don't really think anybody is better than Michael Lewis at dropping you into an interesting subject, maybe even one that you didn't know you were interested in, like,
right.
or that you didn't know could be entertaining. Like, how did the financial crash of 2008 come about, and who knew about it, and what could they have done, and who were the players? But he drops you right into the middle. He finds people that are just fascinating characters that he can spin the story around, and it's really great. And since Victoria mentioned that Dad is a Democrat, so we can do presidential biographies, but she said avoid anything like Reagan would be a no-go. I'm going to toss out maybe Confidence Man by Maggie Haberman. Mm. I just read it. It's not a presidential biography, especially in the like old-fashioned sense of like historical document of admiration for a person. But I think a really important historical document that takes a look at Trump's whole life. It was holistic in approach, not just the political years and the time in the White House and the aftermath, but really his entire adulthood, his entire career, and laid context for some things that I found to be really helpful. I know folks have had some objections to like, she saved stuff for the book, and she actually addresses this in the book, that there are stories that took so long to confirm that she could not confirm them, like while he was still in the White House or while he was still running for office, in a way that would have impacted potentially public opinion. So those things got confirmed in time for the book. It's well written. Haberman can write. I don't know. I'm glad that I read it. I can't say I enjoyed the process. That's where we're going to leave that one.
I was reading a little, I guess, profile of Haberman. I can't remember where. And I guess I knew, but I've forgotten, and I'm asking you here if it comes across in the book, how, like, what a weird relationship she has with Trump. Like, he'll just call her or whatever.
Yeah, yes.
I really would like to see, like, wouldn't that make a great subject of, like, a play or some sort of movie or something like this? Like, this two-person weird, I don't know what this symbiotic, parasitic, whatever else that relationship is.
She does. Strange. She does write about it, like, just picking up the phone and him being like, it's Donald, here's the thing I want you to say. She writes about some lunches that they had, about like texts that he would send her, or sometimes when she wrote a piece that he didn't appreciate, he would just start tweeting about her. Like, her name becomes famous outside of New York Times readers because of him. He really Streisand affected her. And she doesn't spend a lot of time like interrogating that relationship, but it is pretty present on the page of like that. She had reported on him for a long time, and they had this sort of a long-standing, increasingly antagonistic in both directions relationship, I think. But it was really interesting to see her note that and how she handled it.
I can't remember why, but I was thinking again about the Steve Jobs movie that Aaron Sorkin wrote, starring Michael Fassbender and Seth Rogen. It was basically about the relationship, mostly about Steve Jobs, but the best parts were between Wozniak and Jobs. And I was like, a similar kind of almost black box movie with the two of them at the center. I would watch the living crap out of that, especially if Aaron Sorkin decided to write the language for it.
Yeah, I mean, I texted you this weekend. I just saw She Said, the adaptation of the book by Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey. And there's a lot of just like the reporting stuff there, just reporters on the road and the people that they're trying to get interviews with and who will say things and who won't say things and are they going to get Weinstein or are they not? And I think a similar, like, if you could get sort of a two-hander about Haberman and Trump, it would be fascinating.
All right. I think the next read's for me, Rebecca and Jeff, a request for myself. There you go. That's what we like to hear. I'm a new mom who's looking for a few audiobooks to sustain me through the long late night hours of infant care. Oh, darling, do I know what you're talking about. I'm open to both nonfiction and literary fiction, but specifically like something that's fantastic on audio, whether it's a compelling subject or a great narrator. I've enjoyed Patrick Radden-Keefe's books on audio, and I love a good self-narrated food memoir like Kitchen Confidential, Eat a Peach, or Cry in H-March. I mean, checker on a checker on a checker for us, Rebecca, for those three. I have Heartbreak, That Was My First Thought, by Florence Williams, lined up, and currently enjoying Matrix by Lauren Groff. I bet that's good on audio. I don't do much fiction on audio, but I bet that's an interesting one. First person. Is that first person? It's not really. It's close third, I guess. Matrix
yeah, it's close third.
And any others I should explore? Thank you and love the show. Chloe.
I'm realizing I should have put The Martian and Project Hail Mary on here. And since you didn't, I guess I'll just kick us off with those. Those are just two big winners in my last decade of audiobook listening. They are fun and funny and engaging. You will have a good time. I really liked, for the food area, Rebel Chef by Dominique Krenn. She, I think, is based out of San Francisco now. I think I first became aware of her through an episode of Chef's Table. Just a really interesting life. Unusual to be a woman who becomes very famous in the food world, especially at the time that she did. I believe she's in her 50s now. So she was really in the dealing with the like boys club of sort of old fashioned food world stuff. She's also queer. And so that sort of double marginalization really made her work and her life challenging and interesting in a lot of ways. So I really just learned a lot and found her to be an interesting person. She also has a lovely accent and she reads the audiobook. So as a narration experience, that was really nice. Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. One of the funniest audiobooks I've ever listened to. It's a little older now, but like it's about his childhood and his early adulthood. So like, it's not like it's outdated, but just interesting. He's an interesting guy. He's had a fascinating life. And just recently, I was listening to Matthew Perry's memoir, as I talked about on the show. Not a light subject at all, but it would ring your bells of compelling subject and great narrator. So I'll toss that in.
I wonder, I would like to see a follow-up to Noah's Born a Crime about his years as the late night, the host. The celebrity. I mean, think of the stories he has now. Wouldn't those be wonderfully and hilariously wrought by Trevor Noah?
It would be great. Would now that he's, and now that he's leaving, maybe he will get to do something like that.
I went for audio specialness. I think they sponsored our show last week, so disclaimer.
They did.
Inside Voice by Lake Bell. It's a Pushkin joint. I say go look at the Pushkin catalog. They specialize in audiobooks that are supposed to kind of only be audiobooks, and I don't know if there's even a print copy of Inside Voice. I don't know how you would do it. Lake Bell is an actress, but also especially well known for her voice work. Even made a movie, which I really enjoyed, called In a World, about movie trailer narrators. I mean, it's about a whole lot else, but like that's the conceit, that she's trying to become the female version of the dude that says "In a World" over movie trailers.
I love that.
And then she's a great mimic. She's very interested in language and accents and how the human voice works and what we do with it. Her performance of this, I don't even know what to, I guess it could be almost a one woman show, except for all the clips that she's bringing in. Like, she plays voicemails from her family, recordings of her she has when she's 12. It's that thing that Pushkin does. And I think this is the thing we didn't know we wanted. I'll speak for you and I here. When we talked about enhanced ebooks, we wanted enhanced audiobooks. We're doing things that only audio can do. This is one of those. I was great. It's not very long. I mean, unfortunately, what you're looking to do is eat hours, and neither of my picks are long ones. This, I think, is 6 hours on audio. Though she's such a good narrator, I didn't speed it up because she reads like speaking, and speaking is faster than narration. And one of my audiobook pet peeves is narration. I like, even when we were doing annotated, I even sort of like to perform like more like I was speaking than I was reading or narrating. It's really good. I'm not sure it's going to blow your mind, though. She does talk about, like, especially the politics of female voices. As you might imagine, that's foremost in her mind as someone who works in Hollywood, as a woman who's interested in voices as well. And then there's a late night quality to Intimations by Zadie Smith. And again, it's a COVID thing. And I don't, your mileage may vary about how much you want to go there. At this point, for me, the topic matters less for Zadie Smith in this one, though it matters. But again, sentence level. But the real gem here, as we've talked about before, is Zadie Smith. It might be one of my top five favorite narrators just by herself, and she's narrating. This is the only thing I've ever heard her do. Wonderful, warm reader, and a wonderful mimic. So when she's doing the characters in her family, in her neighborhood, whether in London or from her childhood, I think she grew up in London. I can't remember exactly where, and over in the UK, but also then in New York. She would do a little bit of singing, which is so charming. I was like, wow, this is really great. So I think you'll feel, I think kind of what I want to recommend for you is where you feel like you've got someone there in the room with you on these late nights. And I think both of these books do that. Zadie Smith's Intimations and Inside Voice by Lake Bell.
You talking about Zadie Smith mimicking her family reminded me, I think it's criminal if we don't put Priest Daddy by Patricia Lockwood on this list.
Did you do it on audio?
I did.
Did I do this on audio? I think I did,
I think
too.
You did. I think I did. I think you're the reason I did it on audio.
Yeah, it's... Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm getting it confused with something else. Yes, yes. Patricia Lockwood's Priest Daddy. Okay, yes. Oh, that's
a
great
ride.
Thought. That is a great thought.
Like... It's a ride. Wait, and I can't even remember the setup. The setup doesn't even really matter, but it's like her dad was a priest and then isn't a priest because he gets married and has children, but it's this kind of zany family.
Sort of defrocked because he had kids, and it's complicated, and as you might
think. It is impossible, It's impossible to sum up. Her voice is wild.
Right.
The family
one.
Stuff is wild. It's so entertaining. And she's just a character.
Yeah.
That's an all-timer.
That is an all-timer. I had forgotten about... I think the records are lost. The Library of Alexandria in like 2019 and 2020. I don't know what happened to my reading list files, and that was right in there. But that's a great thought, Rebecca. That's a really good one. Okay. So who read last? I can't remember.
Let's see. You...
I read the last one.
Read last. Yeah. So I'll read this one. Let's see. They are looking for a book or a stack of them for their slightly curmudgeon other half who enjoys historical fiction. But then they also say, I mean, if it happened last week, that would be historical enough. And they're the subgenre of outdoor adventure fiasco with man versus nature, but with a deep reverence for the natural world. Also works for them. I knew where you were going to go with this, so I'm just going to hand it to you.
That's fine. I do like, I read this as subgenre outdoor adventure / fiasco man. I was like, oh, the fiasco man. I'd read that. I know that genre. It's like someone who just got themselves into a jam and have to think, fiasco man. Suddenly I find myself with my arm trapped under a boulder.
Right.
That kind of
27
stuff.
27 hours? Yeah.
Yeah, so you correctly assumed, I was reading this, I'm like, okay, did Rebecca already get to Peter Heller? And in parentheses, you have assumed Peter Heller would be your pick. So because I recommended to you, you very kindly passed the book to me. I would say all the Peter Heller books, specifically The Guideline, maybe The River, go look at the synopsis pick, maybe get several of them. My entree was The Dog Stars, which I think, because it's a little less, I don't know how to put this. The Guide and The River are very much like they are outdoor thriller adventures, and they're really great. And I think another thing, I wouldn't say he's William Finnegan, but it's elevated writing in kind of a genre category. So it crosses over into a literary mold, which is why you and I tend to like it. The Dog Stars is post-apocalyptic, but very lightly so. The main character finds themselves holed up on this compound, I think on the front range of the Colorado Mountains, with someone else that they kind of just got thrown together as the stuff went down. And so it's a working relationship, but not necessarily a warm one. And it's a survivalist tale, but also an exploration of, like, you know, survival's not enough. As all these kind of apocalyptic books that are worth their salt eventually come to, a survival not enough. You can do Station 11, you can do The Road, you can do all the ones you want to do. But this one's pretty good too. It has a very, like, how would you put it? Like, logistical bent, like, how are we going to get from A to B and taking care of the water and the gas in the plane and all that stuff, which I really enjoy. And I think the curmudgeon historical fiction outdoor adventure person likes that. Oh, how did they get up that mountain with a leg broken and only, you know, a rubber band and bubble gum to get up there? How'd they MacGyver their way through a forest, I think is what you're looking for. But then The Guide and The River are a little bit more straightforward. They don't have that spec fic element, so your mileage may vary there. But just take a look. Pick one out. And if you don't want to pick one out, get The Guide. There you go. Peter Heller. Pretty good.
Yeah, it's just a straight shot to the middle of this request. Yes. I don't even know where to go with it. Like, for somebody who spends a lot of time outdoors, I don't read a lot of it, at least a lot in fiction. I think I really latched onto the deep reverence for the natural world within fiction thing here. And there are some elements of that in Small World by Jonathan Evison. Also just a big sprawling work of historical fiction that winds through America before it was America up to the present day, characters from diverse backgrounds and experiences, really interesting questions. And it has that Dickensian thing that I love of like a bunch of threads that you're not sure at the beginning how they are related, mm-hmm. all coming together at the end. So I think that might ring this curmudgeonly reader's bells, but there's nothing better here than a Peter Heller pick. This one for sure.
Listeners out there, if you have Peter Heller read-alikes, I don't have, like, who's the next author on my list? I don't have one. I'm assuming there's more out there, but I don't have a good follow-up, and I could use some, because this kind of thing does come up from time to time.
Yeah. All right.
Is it my read? It's me. I'm now down the Peter Heller rabbit hole on Amazon looking at the other books. Okay. Would love a recommendation for myself this year, ! We would love to give you one. Emily, spending a lot of time reading for graduate school, so would appreciate a book that is easy to get into and propulsive while being character-driven, as you prefer that more than plot-driven. This year, some favorite reads were Black Cake by Charmaine Wilkerson, Dinosaurs, and The Swimmers by Julia Otsuka. Thank you so much. ! Emily.
All right. Well, since you liked Lydia Millett and Julia Otsuka.
Oh, I skipped over saying Lydia Millett's name. I just realized that. Sorry. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But since she liked those, I think this is a reader who can hang with some slight weirdness in their literary fiction, a little something off or different. So I'm going to start with Now Is Not the Time to Panic, Kevin Wilson's brand new novel. I love Kevin Wilson. There's always something a little bit different in his fiction. You can sink right into it. And this one, like, I went into this totally cold. All I knew is this is the new Kevin Wilson. So I was delighted to discover things that I would have known if I had read the jacket copy, like that it's a novel about two teens in the 90s who create artwork that accidentally starts a satanic panic in their small town.
Whoops.
And that it like, and
then
it
does.
Sort of, right, just it spins out of control the way that satanic panics did, mm-hmm. and do. They couldn't stop it if they wanted to, but it becomes this cultural thing that decades later people are still talking about and that has shaped the narrator's life. It's great. Just really fun and funny. You will get sucked right into it. And it is mostly about the characters and how they deal with this thing that's happening and then this thing that had happened to them. Clara and the Sun by Ishiguro, another wonderful, just like The Swimmers was really quiet. And so I also kind of picked that up here. Like Clara and the Sun is really quiet. And it's kind of amazing that a book that's told from the perspective of an AI in a like near future can be really quiet and meditative, but it is because Ishiguro is magical and nobody's better at character driven, quiet, not much happens, but you're fascinated the whole time than Ishiguro. And maybe The Change by Kristen Miller. That one's a little bit more plotty, but super, super fun, in which women, a group of three or four women who are hitting menopause, discover that they have actual powers through that change that is happening in their bodies, and they use it to basically become like vigilante crime fighters. It was very satisfying.
You know what's funny about The Change? And then I read when Women Were Dragons at the same time, so they're twinned in my mind. They're high concepts. And I think weirdly both of them are kind of wanting to be more character studies than plot driven, even with an extremely high plot. With a lot of plot.
They kind of
feel like they kind of want to actually be more character studies. So I think The Change is high concept and they are vigilantes, but that is not the most interesting thing about them. It's their relationship to each other and then kind of what they're going through them by themselves. So I think that's a cagey pick, Rebecca, there.
Thank you.
On my list, I'm going back a couple years to a literary bestseller from 2 years ago, I think, The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett was.
It's a really good pick.
It has quite a bit of plot, too, but it also becomes down to character and relationship. So the setup here is twin sisters who are born into a family who lives in this town for light-skinned black people. And then they move away, and then one of them starts to pass for white. And I think that's enough from a plot point of view. Mm-hmm. It's about identity. It's about relationship. It's about character. And it has, I think, one of the reasons it sold particularly well is it has enough plot that it's the kind of commercial literary buyer was into it, right? Is that what you would say? Is that a fair characterization of it?
Oh, for sure, yes. Yeah. It made the book club rounds. Yeah.
Yes, it definitely does. And it's hard to make the book club rounds without pretty good plot without a page turning quality that isn't just about character. So that one's really good. And then this one I read this year, another one that's actually, I think, a character story with more plot than it knows what to do with, The Family Chow. Mm. I didn't love it. I really liked it, but I'm kind of wondering what you would think of this, Emily, because the setup here is there's this family, the Family Chow, and I think they're in the upper Midwest somewhere, but it's a first and second generation family, and the first generation has run this restaurant, and there's a domineering patriarch, and then the kids are, you know, all dealing with that domineering. They're all back together. The band is all back together again for one weekend, and I don't really remember why. I think it's just that one of the kids is back and the other two live there. And then there's a murder. So it's like this domestic thing with a real huge plot thing in the middle that I'm not used to in a book like this, especially inside the family. So it's a little bit betwixt and between, and the more I think about it, the more I think my B-plus reaction was I wasn't sure what to do with that, because kind of like Lessons in Chemistry, I hadn't seen that before, so it felt disjointed, but maybe that's just the awkwardness of the new as a reader, not as a writer. But the more time has passed, the more I admire and like, and to the point where I'm recommending it to you, Emily, The Family Chow by Lan Samantha Chang. So those are my two picks there.
I think you just sold that one to me.
I would be so interested to see what you think. It's a good over the holiday reading experience. A lot of it happens in wintertime. Feels like it's very cold there all the time in this book. So it's a good winter read.
That sounds good. I want to make a recommendation request to our listeners.
Yes.
Because I have I'm also going to Maui, but at around the end of December. You and I did not plan this,
no, we did not.
This to happen at the same time. But I want to, you know, take some paperbacks with me for the beach reading, because I don't like to sit on the beach with my iPad. And I would love some recommendations for stuff that's out in paperback that I might have missed when it was in hardcover, or a really good beach read. I'm going to finally do an Emily Henry book. I haven't decided which one.
Yeah.
But yeah, listeners, send us emails.
Why not Beach Read again? Or what's the book? Is that the Beach Read?
There's Beach Read. Yeah, there's Beach Read, and then there's What People We Meet on Vacation, and then Book Lovers. And I think I have been given enough advice that Book Lovers is probably not the one I want to read.
Yeah,
but I'm going to try one of the other two. But I would love some other paperback recs from folks.
Yeah, okay.
Let me know.
My
read. This is looking for a recommendation for a new to him author for their husband for Christmas. He only reads nonfiction, is partial to biographies and memoirs. This year, he read books about Elon Musk, Rob Lowe, Will Smith, Matthew McConaughey, Nick Offerman, the good Bourdain biography, thank you for that distinction, and Dave Grohl, although he didn't like the Dave Grohl one. He loved Klosterman's The 90s, doesn't like pop psychology books like Gladwell or Freakonomics. He'll read anything by Walter Isaacson, John Krakauer, or Bill Bryson. Cherno gets too detailed for his tastes. Doesn't like anything medicine related, so Mukherjee is out. He's also recently gotten into golf and loves to ski. Hope these details help. Sarah, this is like really incredible detail about a person's preferences and dislikes. A+ on giving us guidance.
This is some Hugh Laurie-ian house level triage differential. It's not lupus. It's not, definitely not lupus. Cystic fibrosis. It's none of those things. So what else could it be?
And she says, the last two books that I bought him as gifts, The 90s and The Bourdain, were recommended by us on the show and at large, and he loved them. So she's hoping for a three-peat. Yeah, I'm patting us on the back for this.
I'm kind of cheating.
Okay.
Because Rogues by Patrick Radden Keefe, is entree to Patrick Radden Keefe. I feel like Patrick Radden Keefe might be a good author for your fella here. But Rogues, which I've talked about on the show before, you don't have to pick a person because each one is a profile of a different person. And as the name suggests, they are not square dealers, straight shooters, plain talkers. They are, I think, convicts, criminals, conmen, some alliteration that only Patrick Radden Keefe could come up with there. He's a wonderful writer. He gets into it. The piece de resistance is his relationship with El Chapo, to the point where his profile of Al Chapo is so good that Al Chapo asked Patrick Radke to ghostwrite his memoir, which
That's
is, I don't
such
know.
Such an incredible story.
Is there a bigger magazine profiler flex than something like that happening? I cannot think of one. Like, a profile no. so good that the narco boss of our lifetimes wants you to be their ghostwriter.
And if husband here listens to audiobooks, like, this is, yes. Rogues is so great on audio, because hearing Patrick Radke, which you recommended this to me on audio specifically, mm-hmm. hearing him be like, the phone rings and El Chapo wants me to write his biography. Wild and like, stuff. That's terrifying. What do you do? Yeah. It's amazing.
And I'm kind of guessing that this, and I have a little bit of this too. I don't really read biographies anymore, though I do like a memoir. But what I really am looking for is to get, you know, to know interesting people that are real. Mm-hmm. And this you get, you know, a bit of a smorgasbord. And then, if he liked Patrick Radke, then you can get to some of the other books. You know, Empire of Pain, if you want to read about that. I mean, the title there tells you that's a tough hang, but a wonderfully important book to do. How detailed. And I think this could open up another layer of reading outside, because it sounds like he's kind of reading the ones that he not. This is no shade, but like what's on the table at Barnes & Noble under memoir mm-hmm. biography. And that's fine. Great if you enjoy that, but it sounds like he might be mining for other things. The other thing I was thinking about that came to me before, and while I was wandering around the other day and didn't write it here, maybe look at the works of Stacey Schiff.
She has a new really interesting pick.
Cleopatra biography out, and again, she doesn't have the profile of the names here, but she's really, really good. And so you might be able to slide in something that's just a little bit different, kind of peel back some more layers of the onion of your fellow's reading personality. I found with someone like this, it's not so much that they won't or try these other things. They don't even know to try them, that mm-hmm. these kinds of books are out there. So anyway, Rogues by Patrick Radke. I haven't read the Stacey Schiff Cleopatra, but I read the one about witches, which was really interesting. I think she has one more. Can't think of it at the top of my head, but you might look and see if the Stacey Schiff books, any of them strike you as being particularly amenable to his liking.
Those are really great picks. I noticed this was a pretty dude heavy list, so mm-hmm. I want to break husband out of that and introduce him to some women doing good stuff too. I think Mary Roach might be a fun one here. A little.
Which one do you think? I had this thought too, but then I saw you. Which are the Mary Roaches? Because there's now 9 of them. Grunt, maybe?
Yeah. Stiff is, I think, still like the classic entry yeah. point, because it's a subject that we don't get enough writing about. But I really liked Packing for Mars, yeah. also about, you know, how space travel works. Bonk is really funny. Mary Roach writing about sex research is like right up there. It's really great. But since he read Nick Offerman and Matthew McConaughey, and there is not a small amount of humor in both of those, I think Mary Roach's approach to life and the kind of the universe and everything, it's like a funny, snarkier Bill Bryson in a lot of ways. Yeah. I would put her on the list. I checked in with friend of the pod, Josh Christie, who is the biggest skier I know, and asked about some skiing books here, and he recommended Powder Days by Heather
Hansman.
You went
Hansman, out, I was like, you snaked this from me. I was going to recommend, I've read this book. Anyway, that's
fine.
You
did?
Josh knows
okay,
what he's talking
well,
about. This is a good pick.
Yeah, he said that it's the best book he's ever read about what it feels like to be a skier. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you've read it too.
Sneaky political,
I didn't know
too,
that.
If that's something. It's sneaky political, which I like myself.
Interesting. But, yeah. Isabel Wilkerson, the way that she presents history and writes it into narrative that's just grounded in like rich detail, not even sneaky political, just political, right. Is really wonderful. I can never remember the title of the first one, but Cast from last year Warmth of Other Suns. Yeah, my brain was going 1,000 Splendid Suns, and I was like, that's not right.
You're kind of mixing a couple of them.
All the Suns, yeah. And then for your like sciencey tip, I really think that somebody who likes the books on this list would like I Contain Multitudes by Ed Yong, but I don't know if that's too medicine-related for him, so I tossed in An Immense World, which is Yong's new book that's more about the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. And if somehow this man has not read Stephen Johnson, you got to get him to Stephen Johnson and, you know, How We Got to Now and those kinds of things, sort of big collected cultural, social history,
right,
history of invention, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you can make the switch from history of people to history of ideas, then there's a whole lot, there's a lot of worms under that rock. Interesting.
That's a really great way to phrase that. Yes. Expanding to history of ideas. Okay.
Let's see. I read. Hi there. I wanted to send a recommendation request for myself. Years ago, near the start of my audiobook journey, I listened to The Museum of Whales You Will Never See by A. Kendra Green, and I've been chasing that high ever since. I think y'all might have been where I got that rec for that. Jeff, pause. I'd never heard of this book. Did you mention this book?
Me
at
neither.
Some point?
No. Okay.
We cannot take credit for this.
I need this person to write back and tell us what is amazing about this audiobook. So that we can
yeah.
Get there too.
Did you look it up on? I looked this book up, and it's about someone who goes to all the weirdo museums in Iceland. Apparently, Iceland has the highest number of museums per capita in the world, and they're to very specific subjects. And fascinating to see. Yeah, what's so great about this audio? I'm willing to believe it. It's just, I don't know.
Tell
us. Other highlights. The Bird Way by Jennifer Ackerman. Word by Word by Corey Stamper. That's good. Because Internet by Gretchen McCall. That is actually a really good audiobook too. Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. Girly Drinks by Mallory O'Meara, which is also good. The Truth About Animals by Lucy Cook. Do you have any more books in that vein? One thing. I need the books to be narrated by the authors or else I can't listen. Well, that's a stronger edict than mine, which I prefer the author, but I don't need it. Thank you and take care, Morgan. Okay, Rebecca, this is maybe more of a Rebecca-shaped hole, but I'm not sure. It feels maybe a little bit more like it.
I was really fascinated by how different the subject matter of some of these highlight audio listens.
This is an experiential rather than subject matter Rex, right?
Yeah. And so I just went straight for really good experiences on audio that I think might translate for this person. In my top five forever is When Women Were Birds by Terry Tempest Williams, which I read in print approximately 1 million times the year that it came out. And then I got it on audio so that I could just dip in and out of it when I wanted to. She has one of the best reading voices, and it is just, the audiobook is just beautiful. It's, you know, soothing and thoughtful and meditative in a lot of ways. I just find her to be kind of entrancing. It's a great audio experience. A totally different flavor of great audio experience is How to Be Perfect by Michael Schur, which we talked about on our most giftable books of the year. So it's not my only pick right here, but that's a really great, fun audio. He does lots of footnotes, but they weave them into how it's presented in a really nice way. And I also think Big Friendship by Anne Friedman and Aminatou Sow, which is about their like a decade of being best friends who also hosted the Call Your Girlfriend podcast together. And that friendship is like one of the most important relationships in either of their lives. They met in their mid-20s. They wrote this book together in their mid-30s. So like navigating more than a decade of a friendship in times when life changes, people are moving across the country, somebody gets partnered, somebody gets unpartnered, also their business partners. How do you make all of that stuff work out? At one point, they go to couples therapy together as friends to like make sure that they're preserving their friendship in the way that they want to. And I just thought it's a great book about what it's like to have those kinds of friendships in your lives, but also just the way that they write to and about each other is really lovely. And the audio was fun and they narrated it together, which is not an experience that I've had with two people narrating a book together about their relationship with each other is just a great vibe. I think that's my big pick there.
I couldn't find a through line of topic, clearly, which is fine because it does sound like an audiobook journey is an audiobook experience. I couldn't really find the vein of connectivity. So I went with a slightly of a zag, which is, I was trying to think of the audiobooks I remember listening to. Like, I can remember myself listening to them, like, in the car or while I was painting a room or just doing something. And one jumped out to me in thinking of this is I remember Hunger by Roxane Gay, a very difficult book.
That's
super
heavy. That's
a brave
audio choice.
Well, I'm saying it right now out loud because it's very heavy. It's heavier than everything you have here, though it's not. It's sort of following down from When Women Were Birds because you're getting heavier and heavier as we go. But as an audiobook experience, there's kind of nothing like it. It's Roxane Gay's memoir of her her own history, all the trigger warnings for sexual abuse, harrowing stuff there. And then that how that's followed her to her thinking about her body and her life and her weight and her eating and identity. It's as open and raw and as close to someone's experiential metal as you're ever going to find. And when you're thinking of singular audiobook experiences, that's one for me. This is where I get to shout out Heartbreak by Florence Williams.
Yes.
Right? I think this one is a level or two lighter than Hunger, maybe closer to, you know, Word by Word's a book about language. So is Because Internet, frankly. So they're lighter, but they're interested in the world and trying to connect idea, big ideas about the world to specific moments or relationships or words or phrases. So I think that one would be pretty fascinating as well. I'd be curious to hear, especially for this one, we always want to hear y'all's reaction to how our recommendations went over. But Morgan, if you pick any of these, let us know if we were even in the ballpark, because I could feel like I could be throwing a strike, or I could be like Charlie Sheen in Major League and throw it like above the backstop here a little bit. So hard to say. Okay, I think go ahead.
The Major League reference makes me surprised that you didn't talk about the Church of Baseball up a couple questions the person whose dad.
I did think about this. If we could sidebar for a minute, here's the thing.
Yes.
You have to like the movie. And if I don't know you like the movie, it's not, I don't think it's good enough on its own to be like, I don't know anything about this movie, or I was lukewarm about this movie. It's not that good, but if you like the movie, it's great. So for the right reader, it's great. But I almost need someone to say, it's not even enough to say you like baseball, frankly. You need to say, do you like the book Bull Durham? Yes. Then I can recommend it to you. But short of that, I don't think I can do it. Maybe if you like books about Hollywood, maybe I could do that. But okay. I really think it's pretty specific. But I appreciate you being worried about how I was going to get The Church of Baseball by Ron Shelton, which is a wonderful memoir by the writer-director of Bull Durham about the making of that movie, which is great. And if you out there know someone who likes Bull Durham, that's my rec. But you didn't mention that in your recommendation request, so I cannot specifically tailor it to you. But there I am. Okay.
All right.
Mine?
Yes, yours.
I'm terrible at keeping track of whose turn it is to read. We've reached the point in the year when my wife says I'm no longer allowed to buy books off my TBR list for fear of duplicating a Christmas gift. So I'm in search of good Christmas/cozy reads. I'm not a big romance reader, but I really enjoyed In a Holidays by Christina Loren, The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches by Sangu Mandana, The Switch by Beth O'Leary, and all of T.J. Klune's books. Big bonus points if there's a lesbian couple, especially if they are moms. I would love a backlist that I can get from the library, but I'm open to new releases. Thanks, Jessica.
Well, you did your homework here.
I did. Well, you go first. I mean, I cheated. You actually have picks, but I have a reference.
I have picks. My first one, these are both new releases, but that are on my radar for this year. The first one is Kiss Her Once for Me by Allison Cochran, which I started over the weekend. And I have not concluded that this is a book for me, but is about, it's set in Portland. It's about, I think, the Gen Y kind of characters, maybe Gen Z characters. So they're in their early 20s. The main character sort of stumbling in her life, feeling a little directionless, dealing with a lot of anxiety, had this magical Christmas Eve a year ago where she bumped into someone. She met a girl in Powell's and they spent the whole day together, and it was snowing and wonderful. And she thought, like, maybe this is going to be it. Maybe, like, this is my person. And that was it. They had that one day together. And since then, there's been sort of, you know, no romance in her life. And this is another little lesbian holiday romance novel. I don't want to say any more about the plot. I think for me, like, I started it, I don't know any more about the plot myself. And I tried not to learn about it because I like to go into books cold. I think the characters are a little young for me to relate to. And so since you're looking for characters to be moms, I don't know that this is like a straight shot up the middle. The other one on my list for the holidays is The Holiday Trap by Rowan Parrish, which is about a woman who lives in a tiny small town in Maine, and nobody understands how hard it is to be a lesbian living in such a small world. And she figures out that she needs to, like, get some space to figure herself out. And a friend suggests that she do a house swap with a guy that they know, who has just learned that his boyfriend had a whole secret life, and he wants to get away from his life in Louisiana to like lick his wounds and sort of figure himself out. And so a friend of theirs suggests that they do a house swap. This is, you know, kind of straight out from The Holiday with Cameron Diaz.
Yeah.
And who is the other woman in that movie? I can never remember.
Rachel Weisz, right? Or Kate Winslet? Which one is it? I get them.
It's Kate Winslet. Yes. But since this person mentioned liking The Switch by Beth O'Leary, which is about a young woman who trades houses with her grandmother and goes into a small town in the UK, I think this vibe might be right for you. The Holiday Trap by Rowan Parrish. I'm going to read it over the holidays for sure, but I haven't gotten there yet. Okay. Now continue with your well done cheating that I think probably better answers this question.
So I was looking, I'm entering these into our shared Google Doc as the emails are coming in, and I was like, when I saw this one, I was like, okay, well, that one I don't have a reading experience that immediately comes to mind. I'm gonna have to go do some homework. And then I think in the intervening days, on a little website called bookriot.com, there's a post called Happy Holidays, New LGBTQ Holiday Romances for 2022. So that is my recommendation for you. I'll put a link in the show notes. You can see there's a lot of different picks, a lot of different kinds of things. In trolling through it real quick, I don't see there's one that's a home run bullseye, to mix my sports and gaming metaphors, but a lot there. And I guess a meta note, does this list exist 6 years ago? And this many releases for holiday, isn't it remarkable? I mean, sometimes
it's wonderful.
Kurt Vonnegut style, you got to stop every now and says, "Isn't it grand?" Or "Isn't this great?" Or "Isn't this nice?" What is the line?
If this isn't nice, I don't know what is.
I don't know what is. This is one of those. If this isn't nice, I don't know. Still a lot of ways to go, but that there's a whole list of looks 12-ish, if not more, new LGBTQ holiday romances. So circles within circles within circles there. I'm so glad that these exist for people that want them, and it looks like that's the best I can do for me. Mm-hmm. Jessica, I hope something there sounds great to you. Let me do a sponsor break, and then we'll do a little bit more before this part one wraps up.
Today's episode is brought to you by Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us. When the life Soledad Barnes built with the man who was supposed to be her forever goes poof in a cloud of betrayal and disillusion, there is no time to pout or sulk or even grieve the life she lost. But then an unlikely man enters the picture. He's the forbidden one, the one she shouldn't want but can't seem to resist. Y'all know how that goes. But Soledad's lost it all before and refuses to repeat her mistakes. She asks herself, can she trust him? Can she trust herself? From the ashes of a life burned to the ground, something bold and new can rise. So This Could Be Us is an instant New York Times and USA Today bestseller. It's been featured on the Today Show and CBS Mornings. And Kennedy Ryan is the first Black romance author to hit the New York Times adult bestseller list in almost 3 years, which is amazing. Make sure to check out the new book. And thanks again to Forever and Kennedy Ryan's heart-searing sensual This Could Be Us for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high-stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must-read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, this is your read.
All right, this is from Kate, looking for a recommendation for herself. Looking for something based on vibes, but is going to try to give us criteria. And so the vibes we're trying to match are Cloud Atlas by David Mitchell, The Old Drift by Namwali Sirpel, The Actual Star by Monica Byrne, To Paradise by Hanya Yanagihara. So just pause here for applause, Jeff O'Neill. The Luminaries by Eleanor Catton. The rough criteria are doorstop category, 400 to 600 pages. Follows multiple characters, ideally over different timelines or with interweaving narratives. A touch of sci-fi, fantasy, futurism, or genre stuff that doesn't feel too genre-y. And of the books they listed, Cloud Atlas, The Old Drift, and Luminaries are among the faves. The other two didn't quite hit the mark, but she enjoyed reading them. Take it away.
Does above 600 pages not be, it's not a doorstop? I guess that's furniture. Above, I guess that's a different category.
They're just, then now we're splitting hairs.
I was at a friend's house the other day and they had a paperback of It on the coffee table. And that thing is 5,000 pages long. I don't think, it's been a while since I've seen that book. And it just, I don't know if it was large print. I was like, is that really? That was shocked.
Was it also, that mass market paperback? That was impossible to hold.
I don't even know. Is a human supposed to hold that? Some sort of robot reads that? I don't know what to do. Also, the 9-year-olds that were in the room were like literally terrified of it. Like it was just sitting there and they were all staring at it like it was
nobody's walking
like
near
an open beaker of bubonic plague. They really didn't want to be close to that thing. I've got one.
Okay.
And I think I can't quite suss the difference, like why. So the favorite chair, Cloud Atlas, The Old Drift, and Luminaries. The ones not listed as favorites were The Actual Star and To Paradise behind Yanagihara. A little hard to say why you might like one different than the other, but my pick is Trust by Hernan Diaz, which came out this year, and it's long. It's certainly long enough to fit in this category. And how it's done is it's four novellas together, but they're all circling around a robber baron banker, I think in the 20s. It gets confusing, and you'll hear why in a second. So the first one, I think, and it's been 6 months, and it's complicated enough that my memory of it is a little less than specific. You can go do your own research about it or pick it up and see if it's exactly right. The first one's a memoir of this banker, and the second one is like an odd, like a biography based on that memoir, and the third one is like correspondence of the person writing the biography of the first person, but they're all trying to go around this similar topic. I think it's virtuosic and difficult to wrap your head around, but I didn't find it hard to turn the pages, which sometimes books like this are hard to do. It doesn't really have the genre stuff, unless you count historical fiction, which I kind of feel like is cheating when we say genre, don't you? That's not what people mean by genre.
Yeah,
I don't think they mean historical fiction. But I thought it was remarkable. I think it might be a little closer to Cloud Atlas in terms of their refractions of the same story, though that's what... I don't know. That's my pick. Go read about it. Again, I don't know that at the 10 page, but like read it. If you read even like a New York Times review or a Washington Post book review where they're actually like trying to get the details right and explain it to someone who will probably never read the book, that will give you a good hint. But this is my pick, Trust by Hernan Diaz. I'm a little surprised we haven't seen more end of year listy stuff for this because it is the kind of literary, formal experimentation, interesting, unusual for commercial fiction subject matter. I don't think it's sold well enough. I think it's probably hard to get into. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be exempt from award season. I just haven't seen as much as I thought I was going to. I just haven't. So maybe if you like an under the radar kind of a pick, that will get you there as well. Go pick that up if you can.
I've been sort of circling Trust for like 6 months, unable to decide if I'm going to go in or not.
Did you? Well, of the books here, you're not. Did you like? Have you read Cloud Atlas? Do you like the Luminaries? Do you like these?
I did Cloud Atlas, and I was like fine on Cloud Atlas, but not knocked out by it.
And you didn't do To Paradise. Well, talk about your pick, and because I think it's an interesting.
Yeah, I'm just circling it. Mine, it's a little under the 400 pages here, but The Candy House by Jennifer Egan rings the rest of these bells. Multiple characters, different timelines, interweaving narratives, a touch of futurism and genre and spec fic. stuff, but that is, it's so literary in its writing that it doesn't feel super genre-y, and like not really much happens. This is very much about like the ideas of the book. It's challenging in putting together who these characters are and what the connections are in some ways. She really, really trusts readers to like be dropped into the mess and to figure it out themselves, which I do think is a hallmark of the rest of the titles that she's mentioned here. I just think it might be worth a shot if you haven't read it. And I don't know, if you needed to make it into a 600-page experiment, you could read A Visit to the Goon Squad and The Candy House together, and then you'd be at like 750.
You could. That's
put them together. All right. You want to do one more?
Yeah, let's do one more. And this will be my read if I can get back to my tab. Okay. I'm not going to read all of these books and series here, but anyway, book recommendation for me. I'm always looking for a book or series featuring a strong woman who works in the outdoors or in law enforcement, with much of the activity taking place outdoors. More specific this year, Rebecca, sidebar? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're getting some pretty specific ones, which I like, but it really makes me put my hand to my chin and furrow my brow sometimes. Books with male main characters and authored by men are also okay, in parentheses, okay. Books or series I've read include a lot here. I guess to summarize them, not generally my cup of tea, but I don't know a lot of these. I had to look up some. So I largely ignored them, I guess, for my recommendations, Rebecca. To skip down to the end, fiction and nonfiction are fine. Plot and not too slow pace are most important.
Okay,
that's and helpful. Yes, I did love Crawdads and Rugmech in my book group. They all loved it, too. I'm so glad, Sharon, you felt confident enough to say that to us. I'm not, no shade. That's great. Tell us what you like. Mm-hmm. No judgment here.
Yeah. It's really helpful, especially for this, to know what people like.
Looking forward to listening to more episodes. All right. You're up first.
Okay. I want to just second the emotion. I'm really impressed with the specificity of people's requests this year. Like, I don't know, I'm so all over the map in what I read. I think you are too, that like I could not nail down something like this if I had to send in a request for myself, of like woman in the outdoors in these particular vocations, and that a lot of it takes place outdoors. It's really cool to like see that all those threads connect and that there can be so many examples of it for this listener. I latched onto Woman in Law Enforcement and went with While Justice Sleeps by Stacey Abrams, which has all the hallmarks of like a good suspensey thriller and is set at the Supreme Court. It's about a young woman who clerks for a Supreme Court justice, and he is dying, but like possibly in suspicious circumstances, and she gets sort of unwittingly pulled into kind of a conspiracy around his life and something that's going on at the Supreme Court, and also maybe someone is trying to kill him. And it was just a lot of fun. We don't get a whole lot of mystery thrillers by women of color. Our writers at Book Riot who cover the mystery thriller suspense space are talking pretty constantly about how difficult it is to find enough diverse voices to do what they want to do in that genre. I'm not sure why that lag is happening in that genre,
but good question.
Like white dudes just continue to dominate there. So I really wanted to reach for an author that would meet this listener's requests of books that are about women characters doing these things. And then to be able to reach for a woman of color author as well. I really enjoyed While Justice Sleeps. It moved. It had some like Da Vinci Code elements with like Supreme Court and there's conspiracy and the main character. I mean, she's clerking for a Supreme Court justice. She's really smart. It's not direct law enforcement, but like legal profession adjacent. I just thought it was a really fun read.
I'm not going to try to recommend books to you that I haven't read. I'm not doing the, I'm going to go research, because I'm just going to try to stuff to say I like that I think is adjacent. I guess my series pick, I don't do a lot of genre reading, but I read every Jane Harper book that comes out. She's an Australian mystery thriller, police procedural writer. To be honest with you, I think some of the detective / main characters are women, though not all. I think she's great. I look forward to each one. There's not so many of them that I'm swamped. I think she does about one a year. There's one coming out this spring. I really like those. The first one called The Dry hooked me. and I've been for each one. The Lost Man, though, I think is the best one. Also, this is a little bit of a zag. It's a memoir, but it's about a woman doing interesting stuff. It's Hammerhead by Nina McLaughlin. She quits her job to learn to be basically a handy person, right, Rebecca? Right? She leaves her desk job as a reporter, carpenter, handy. Yeah, I guess it is just a straight up carpenter. I don't really know the difference between a carpenter and just a handy person. They all seem like they can do magic to me. So what's the difference between different kinds of magicians is kind of what I'm thinking here. But she's learning about the tools of the trade. She has a really fascinating relationship with her older female mentor carpenter teacher. Basically, she answers a want ad for a carpenter's apprentice and makes a life change. And she's a writer by trade. She's written some interesting, I think one interesting follow-up book. I don't think there's two out. But this might be something to stretch your own legs if you want. I really liked it. The other one that occurred to me later that I didn't come back and put in, I didn't see Tana French among the listed books here. And I read the first one, Into the Woods, which is great. And I knew if I continued, that would be a rabbit hole. Someday, maybe that's when I'm retired. I'm going to go read all the Dublin Murder Squad books. I think there are six of them now. The first book, Into the Woods, has two lead detectives. One of them is a woman. Her name is Cassie Maddox. And I believe she becomes the lead of that series for the rest. Don't hold me to that. But I think probably at this point, Tana French is the leading sort of literary slash mystery writer in terms of sales out there. Her books are hotly anticipated in a huge fandom. And maybe you've already read some of them. But if you hadn't, go pick up Into the Woods and see if you get into the Dublin Murder Squad, because it's pretty great, to be honest with you. And I think we're going to wrap up there. Also, out in the outdoors, I should say, it's called Into the Woods. Australia is basically one big outdoors. Right, for Jane Harper. Most of your carpentry is happening outdoors, or at least the beginning parts of it. All right, Rebecca, that's episode one. Did we get even halfway through? Almost. I put in big red letters.
Almost.
Way done. Almost. So I'll talk to you a little bit later today. And for the rest of you, enjoy your holiday break. I hope you find whatever it is you want over the next few days, whether that's eating or talking or communing or getting some alone time, turning some pages, watching some stuff. Take it easy. Enjoy yourselves. And we'll talk to you soon.